This is the Popmatic Podcast for August 13th, 2014. I mean, this beeth the Popmatic Podcast. I don't know. I don't have any Shakespeare jokes.
Anyone
have
any Shakespeare?
Yeah.
I don't have any, you know, I thumb my nose at you, iTunes. I don't know. I don't have any.
Tis the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this podcast. Perfect. By the pricking of my thumbs, something podcast this way comes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Thank you. Okay, cool. Thank you. That's a good intro. I'm counting on you guys. Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. We are going to talk about Shakespeare on this week's episode. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Amanda,
Bill,
Michael,
Greg.
So we're talking about Shakespeare because Shakespeare in the Park starts very soon. That's going to be every Saturday, August 14th to September 14th. Show starts at 7:30.
Which park?
Zounds.
Centennial Park.
Ooh. That's a nice
to yon Centennial Park. We depart.
We're yonder. What's that I see? A Parthenon.
Doth my eyes deceive me?
I was right. It starts at 7:30. It's free. Suggested donation of $10. This year's play is As You Like It. But the twist is it's set in Depression era 1930s America.
Tennessee, specifically.
Awesome. Directed by Denise Hicks, As You Like It features a songwriting legend David Olney in the role of Amiens, playing his own original songs written for the show. Music director Stan Lawrence leads an authentic old-time jam band with players from the Musical Heritage Center in Pegram, Tennessee. The performance is inspired by the optimistic comedies of the 1930s. Set during the Great Depression, costumed ushers will invite the audience to join actors in our version of a Hooverville, where in even the toughest times, songs are sung, stories are told, and there's always time for a little buck dancing. Ain't that the truth? Now,
I gotta practice buck dancing, man.
Fun fact about As You Like It, the only Shakespeare play to have a stage direction exit pursued by a bear.
It also is the...
Wow.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah. I want to see the bear. Yeah. Like the 30s bear.
Yeah, I've not read the play, but I did notice that there was a bear that concluded the play. Spoiler alert.
I'm 90% sure that it's also the play that has the famous All the World's a Stage monologue.
Oh, I love it.
Fun play. And I think everyone knows it's actually probably the best free cultural thing that you can do in Nashville, hands down. Other than the library.
I was about to say, going to the library is the best.
What?
other than the library as an institution, it's the best free thing you can do. Now, if you can donate more than $10, please do, because it is an awesome show. Of course, it is put on by the Nashville Shakespeare Festival, which they also do a regular program here at the library called Shakespeare Aloud. What that is every Saturday.
Every first Saturday of the month, I believe.
Boom. Yes, Greg is correct. The first Saturday of every month, you get together. It doesn't matter who you are. You get together, read a Shakespeare play in the round, go through his canon. And you know what I love about this program? People always say, no one likes to read, you know, Shakespeare is hard, you know, the kids need to read books about meth addiction or something to make them like it. And this program has been so successful. I love it. It's going strong for years now. Awesome program. Shakespeare Aloud, first Saturday of every month. I'll put a link with specific times. Check it out.
You have also done Shakespeare-themed puppet shows in the past. There was a Midsummer Night's Dream done with marionettes. So it's a condensed version, but it's really cool, really well done. Part of Brian and the rest of the guys.
Wishing Chair Brian, not...
Yeah, yeah, Brian. Wishing Chair Brian, yeah.
I didn't see Brian play with marionettes.
I want to see Brian play with marionettes.
There's only one Brian at the library, and that's Professor Brian in Wishing Chair.
Hello. Although you make me call you the professor sometimes, too.
Yeah, but then no, I do not.
But then all the puppet plays would be like Philip K. Dick themed. So
do you want to name drop anyone else, Greg?
Can you give me a category?
Is anyone else from Wishing Chair involved with Shakespeare in the Park?
Ah, excellent question. Yes, my partner in crime, Morgan Matins, is doing the stage design for the show. She's also a puppeteer for Wishing Chair Productions. You can see her on the puppet truck. Yeah, and I can tell you that they're working around the clock right now to put the show in action, so don't make it all for naught. Go out and put your your butts in some blankets, grab a bottle of wine.
Yeah, no joke. Every year, it's amazing. Don't miss it. Ready, Amanda?
I'm ready whenever you are.
We're going off the rails here.
Okay. When we decided to do a Shakespeare podcast, I was less than enthused because I am not known, nor have I ever really been, a Shakespeare enthusiast. I kind of did a little bit when the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet came out in the 90s with Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio. That was, I just thought that was a beautiful film in general. But luckily, my hero, Joss Whedon, has redone Much Ado About Nothing. And this was just a pet project of his. He actually shot it in 12 days while he was working on The Avengers. Kind of, it was like they took a break from The Avengers. And he's like, hey, let's shoot this movie. And his beautiful wife allowed him to do that, to take the budget they were going to spend on their 20th anniversary, like vacation trip, and he put it into this movie. So that's a pretty understanding wife. And they shot it in their house in Santa Monica. So like she let them shoot all this movie in their house instead of going on vacation. So that's a pretty big deal. If you've seen anything by Joss Whedon, it's all of his favorite. His cast tends to be very incestuous. Like it always is the same people.
Is that the word you're going for?
Sure.
Okay.
So like, I mean, because
the Joss Whedon troupe.
Yes, true. Okay.
Company.
Stock companies.
Players,
yes. So you'll recognize, if you've seen anything, you'll recognize them. I'm not going to name them all because there's too many and this is only our podcast. But my top five are Alexis Denisov plays Benedict, and you will know him as Wesley from the Buffy Angel saga. Also husband to Allison Hannigan, who played Willow. Then Amy Acker is Beatrice, and she was Fred on Angel, and she was also a somewhat minor character on Dollhouse. Then my guy Nathan Fillion from, of course, Serenity and Firefly, was Dogberry, the lovable constable, who he has just a hilarious role. And then Fran Kranz was Topher on Dollhouse. He plays Claudio. And then Andrew from Buffy, Tom Link, Verges, so who works, is another police officer. So just a cast of thousands in this movie. And when it first started, I wasn't into it at all. Like it took me 2 tries to get through it just because you have to kind of acclimate yourself to the Shakespearean text. And Whedon stayed pretty true to it. He changed like maybe one or two minor things. So this was just a really good, I think it was fun. It came out in June of 2013. And we have it here at the library, so you can check it out. If you're a little leery about Shakespeare, this may be one way that you can enjoy Much Ado About Nothing.
So I just thought it was really appropriate. Maybe this is subjective whenever this movie came out, because I know like Whedon fans are always like, he's the most important writer since Shakespeare.
Wow.
Like I know people say that, seriously. Now, that just makes me shrug my shoulders.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know if I'd go that far.
But it was funny because this movie came out and I was like, oh, okay, that's appropriate.
Anyway. Well, and I remember Nathan Fillion when they were interviewing when him first came out, and he said, Shakespeare is hard, but when Joss Whedon calls you to do something, you just say yes and then figure out how to do it later. So, I mean, there was, sometimes the dialogue was just a little stilted, but, I mean, they did it in 12 days, so.
People do it in 2 hours.
Fair enough.
And do you know there's a new big Joss Whedon bio that just came out?
Is there really?
Yes.
I am unaware.
We got that recently.
Yeah, Joss Whedon, the biography by Amy Pascal and Nathan Fillion. Bill, what you got?
First, I want to kick this off. This is my impression, my junior high school's English class reading Macbeth by William Shakespeare. Macbeth. Go bid thy mistress when my drink is ready. She strike upon the bell. Get thee to bed. This is a dagger which I see before me. Now, I don't know about you, but I would prefer to listen to nails on a chalkboard. In my English class, each student was assigned a part which they were supposed to read, and let me tell you, it really sucked. The point to all this is my English teacher thought it would be better understanding if you read it aloud in class. He also didn't like any of the film performances of Macbeth.
Well, Mel Gibson?
Yeah. Well, he was wrong. Over time, I know the only true way to appreciate Shakespeare is to see it perform. And we have in our collection the complete dramatic works of William Shakespeare produced by BBC and Time Life Films on DVD. We also have a fully dramatized recordings of Shakespeare on audio CD. My theory is You'll have a greater appreciation for the bard's work if you see it or hear it done by professional actors. I also have another theory that's why it's such a turnoff now for people to mention Shakespeare and they go, yuck or ooh, I don't want to go through that. I had to go through that crap in high school. My viewpoint is you weren't introduced to Shakespeare properly in the first place. I also want to recommend two books, Isaac Asimov's Guide to Shakespeare and Shakespeare for Dummies. My goal is when you're assigned to Shakespeare play, you'll comprehend it better with these materials. I just recommend it, and it won't be such a turnoff for you when you started high school today when you have to read Shakespeare. So the BBC, we have them DVDs and audio CDs. And they're performed by Shakespeare actors, you know, like Gielgud, Jerick DeCobey, Anthony Hopkins does Othello. I highly recommend them. And
I was thinking about this when we were talking about Shakespeare, and you always think of Elizabethan English and how we think it's hard.
Uh-huh.
But I would be interested to see Elizabethan, like Shakespeare, other folks put into our language and see if they have as much trouble with, you know, American slang as we have with Elizabethan. I thought that would be fun to cross-pollinate that.
You just melted my brain.
Yeah, wow. I never heard of this.
Deep thoughts.
Have you heard this theory that Shakespearean English is actually more similar to American English than it is to British English?
Well, because Shakespeare was writing for lower classes. He wasn't writing for the aristocracy you know, so that I would just think that I'm like, so I was thinking about how far we've come, we've dumbed down the world, and I was like, well, it's just a different what you're exposed to.
Need to put some monster trucks in Arbor.
And blow something up.
Needs more apps. E-business.
we need to write that script.
Oh, man.
Like, we go back in time and we do...
Borrow the TARDIS and...
Yeah. Oh, it's a Doctor Who episode. Jeez.
We're going to save Shakespeare.
Trademark by National Public Library, not to be used by.
We're taking this show on the road.
Verily, this be but an iPhone 5. I mightily wanted a 5S.
Oh, he's a witch. He has lights in his hand.
So, I'm here today to talk about one of my favorite movies, Theater of Blood from 1973, starring Vincent Price as Edward Lionheart, a terrible actor who only acts in Shakespeare plays. When he's snubbed for a big critics award in London, he plots revenge against the critics who spurned him. It is amazing, you guys. Like, you're missing out. I loved it so much that I listened to the soundtrack on the way to the Belcourt to see it on the big screen last year. Oh my God. Like, basically, every death is like an allusion to a Shakespeare play. Like, the very first one, this critic wakes up and his wife is all like, I had a premonition of your death. And he's like, whatever, you know, and behind him is a busted Julius Caesar. And he goes to like this abandoned building that he owns, and a bunch of like homeless people stab him to death. And, you know, and then they have this big close up on Vincent Price. And he has this whole speech about, you know, I'm here to bury Caesar, not to praise him, and all that kind of stuff. It gets pretty, you know, it gets a little obscure. Like, I know virtually nothing about Troilus and Cressida, but they have, I think that's the one where Hector is drugged behind horses, his body. And so, like, one of the critics is, like, drugged by a horse through the streets of London. It's basically like a slasher film, and it's pretty awesome. It kind of combines my love of snootiness with my love of gore. It also has Diana Rigg and... this guy named Ian Hendry is like the main character slash the only critic who's kind of nice. Although there's this one scene where like Lionheart has him, he's about to kill him. And, you know, instead of, you know, saying that he was good in the role, he says, you were terrible. You were the worst. You know, this young man deserved the award. You deserve nothing. You know, as he's about to get stabbed. Yeah, pretty hilarious. On the disc that we have, it also has a Vincent Price movie called Madhouse, and I would skip that. Yeah, the makeup that he wears is pretty neat, but other than that, it's garbage.
Theater of Blood has a special place in the oeuvre of Vincent Price because it's really meta.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways, it can be read as this metaphor about his own relationship to critics and him being pigeonholed as a horror actor.
Yeah, when asked what his favorite film that he had done was, he always says the Theater of Blood because he gets to kill a bunch of critics.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was pretty funny.
Absolutely.
And also he met his wife on that film.
What?
He electrocutes her. And it was love at first sight.
Wow.
Brown.
Cool.
Wow. That was totally
that
beautiful.
That's cool trivia.
Wow. Uh-huh. Mm. And he always loved to say, where did you, well, I electrocuted her.
Brought her to life.
I was spouting lines from like Henry IV or something. Cool. What do you got, Greg?
I'm going to turn the spotlight over to Hamlet, Melancholy Dane. People sometimes get called a Hamlet if they just can't make up their mind. Well, that's me this week. I couldn't even make up my mind about which Hamlet to recommend, so I chose two. The first is the movie adaptation starring Ethan Hawke as Hamlet. It's New York City around the year 2000 and features a who's who cast of early aught stars. Ethan Hawke as Hamlet, Julia Stiles as Ophelia, that bad guy from the Scream movies as that bad guy in Hamlet. Also, Kyle MacLachlan is Claudius, Bill Murray is Polonius. It's really random. After Hamlet, the senior dies. His brother makes a move to control the Denmark Corporation, which it's never really made clear what they do, but they have a really scary logo. I know this sounds like it has the potential to be really awful, but there's a few things that I really like about the Hamlet 2000 movie. For those who have seen Boyhood already, you know that this movie continues the grand tradition of Ethan Hawke spouting off quasi-intellectual, existential rants about whatever, except in Boyhood, he's the father, and in Hamlet, he's the son. Well, it just so happens that his proclivity for sophizing is the perfect quality to have when playing Hamlet. Moreover, I think that they do a good job of incorporating technology into the story. Some of the most iconic scenes in Hamlet are his soliloquies, to be or not to be, what a piece of work is man, etc. Well, this might normally have been accomplished by a voiceover, but in this version, they've spun it in so that he's a film student. He gets a little handheld video recorder and documents his own pain and suffering just like a modern Hamlet would. And he's inspired to make this monologue after watching a video featuring Thich Nhat Hanh pondering the Buddhist nature of existence, all very Hamlet. The other adaptation is a book, the story of Edgar Sawtelle. Now, if you were to start this book without any introduction, you would probably think it's just a nice book about a family that breeds a bunch of ultra-intelligent dogs and live happily ever after on a farm. It was an Oprah's book club, so it feels safe, shall we say. But let me just save you some grief and inform you that it's actually a very clever retelling of the Hamlet tale, except with dogs. Edgar Sawtelle is the Hamlet figure, and he is born without the gift of speech. But he is able to communicate with dogs, and interestingly enough, his love interest slash companion is Ophelia, is a dog. It's kind of weird. Dogs also have the ability to see ghosts in the story, which comes in handy, as does their ability to participate in theater. I know Brian has this thing about how you can't ruin an ending of a work that's been out for, in this case, 400 years. But if you don't know how Hamlet ends, it's pretty much your typical Shakespearean tragedy. It ends in blood.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So if you or someone you love is afflicted with extreme dog empathy, I suggest avoiding this one. And while you're at it, bookmarking a website called DoesTheDogDie.com. It goes through and rates movies based on their cruelty level to pets. Happy puppy face means that the dog lives. Frowny puppy face means a pet is injured or appears dead but ultimately lives. And crying puppy face means, yeah, you got it.
Oh. I think it is interesting that we're going to talk about Shakespeare and we mostly talk about movies.
I don't read.
And we have not mentioned the what was the one Crystal was going to plug?
We didn't yet.
Polanski's Macbeth.
Which the library should have on order.
Mm-hmm. Criterion's putting out a new.
We have not also mentioned Kenneth Branagh, who owns Shakespeare movies.
Yeah, I liked his Hamlet, even if it is like 3 hours long.
You know, I was going to say that I'm proud that we did not mention him.
Oh! You know, I almost did, because he did Much Ado About Nothing, too.
I didn't watch that one either.
His Hamlet's good. I like that one.
I think this, a lot of people think that he's sort of the standard for modern, straight interpretations of Shakespeare. Hey, on the Tickle My Fancy segment, since we haven't recapped in a while, we talk about things that are tickling our fancy this week. Maybe we have them at the library, they're just happening. Well, I bet anything we talk about, I bet eventually comes to the library in some way. I've been saving this. Does. I have this back pocket material. I wanted to save a joke about like these two stoners are hanging out. The one stoner comes back home and he's like, I was at the library today and there was a magic miniature horse. he's like, you're just stoned, man. There wasn't a magical miniature horse at the library, but actually there was.
But there was.
I was saving that joke. Greg got it.
I was there.
Over my head.
I like pushed a lot of kids out of the way to get to the miniature horse.
You didn't ride the miniature horse, did you?
They wouldn't let me.
There was a miniature horse?
Not for lack of effort.
There was really a
miniature
horse.
There really was. On purpose.
Really?
Mike works in technical services in the basement, so when cool stuff like magical miniature horses come to the library, it's like, what?
The president could come here. You know, I would never know. Nicole Kidman came here. I heard about that.
She came from the basement, though.
Yeah, so. That's how.
That's why.
Makes you sound like a horror film. She came from the basement.
All right. Murder so, Greg, what's tickling your fancy this week?
So I wanted to look back in time at a Nashville original adaptation that took a different slant on the conventional Shakespeare update. I'm talking about a little piece of theater called Terminator the Second.
Woo! It's amazing. I've seen it.
Here's an explanation on the website. Terminator the Second is a parody of the film Terminator 2 Judgment Day. It is constructed solely of lines and phrases from the plays of William Shakespeare. Only proper nouns, pronouns, and verb tenses are subject to change, enabling them to remain true to the words of Shakespeare in form, if less so in intent. So the classic example of this would be, instead of "I'll be back," it was "Parting is such sweet sorrow." And before firing off an Uzi, he would proclaim, "Unleash the dogs of war."
Let this pernicious hour stand I accursed in the calendar. Our ingenious instrument that we but teach bloody instructions, which being taught return to plague the inventor, raiseth our cities and subverts our towns, and in a moment makes them desolate. They call it Skynet.
So thanks to a unique partnership between Husky Jackal Theater, Nashville Shakespeare Fest, and the Nashville School of the Arts, Terminator the Second debuted on the school's main stage in October 2011, and the film version came out in November of last year. You can watch the trailer at watch.terminatorthesecond.com and also order a copy if you're curious. You can also get one with or without the soundtrack, which was made possible by my friends, the band The Proto Man. Shout out. But if you're feeling a bout of melancholy coming on for having missed this unique live theater experience, here's a quick plug. My partner is currently in the planning stages of a production that would bring a Shakespearean adaptation of the movie Top Gun to the stage. One idea she had is put the stage at the old Cornelia Ford Air Park in East Nashville. So you'd, So it's going to be in one, the space will be one of the old plane hangars, but in the backdrop you'd have the whole landing strip, and it, you know, they could do whatever they want to. They could fly like little model planes onto the landing strip, whatever. Like, it's going to be totally crazy. So they're currently working on a Kickstarter campaign, so be on the lookout for that. And if you liked Terminator the Second and you want to see this Top Gun play get made, remember that the Terminator project came out due to local response from the Kickstarter, which in turn led to attention from outlets like Gawker and the Sci-Fi Channel. So be on the lookout for the Kickstarter. The project is likely going to be called Jester's Dead. One of the characters in Top Gun is called Jester.
Yeah, Terminator the Second is pretty amazing. It's the only play I've seen in Nashville. I was like, okay, I got to leave the house for that. And yeah, it's pretty much Terminator 2 with Shakespeare words on stage. And they have like a, you know, driving big rigs and stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It's incredible.
Your cultural perspective is excellent for this podcast.
I don't know if I should be flattered or not. Today, I thought I'd recommend, as part of my series of Tickle My Fancy segments where I watched a movie last week and liked it, White Heat from 1949. Directed by Raoul Walsh, starring Jimmy Cagney as Cody Jarrett, a professional thief who's a crazy loon. He's like a huge mama's boy, like to the point where it's like, whoa, like, dude, quit talking about your mom all the time. What I really liked is that, like, unlike a lot of older movies, it's so fast-paced. You know, you don't spend like 10 minutes in some boring talking scene where they talk about their feelings and what they had for dinner today. No, it's like, you know, almost nonstop, like, you know, action or talking about action or more action. I mean, even like the mom is pretty neat. Like, you know, I thought she'd be like some like meek old lady. No, she was like the wife of a gangster herself. And she helps, you know, old Cody like plan the heists and stuff. Edmund O'Brien, who is also in an excellent movie called DOA. he's like a professional snitch. I thought this was amusing. Like, his whole job is to get into like prisons and like talk up to criminals and get them to confess things. He's hired to bring down Cody when Cody goes to prison to establish an alibi. This is also the movie where the Top of the World Ma came from, a line that, you know, is mentioned occasionally. It's really cool, and I really liked it, and I'm curious to see more gangster films from the 30s and 40s. Oh, and a bit of trivia. According to the promotional materials for a video game, so this may be a complete lie, but called L.A. Noir. 1949 was the most violent year in Los Angeles history, including today. Like, it was the most violent year ever. Not a good time to live in Los Angeles in 1949.
Wait, was your, like, source of facts the video game L.A. Noir? So
That's right.
Your fact checking is based on ad campaigns for video games. I love that. That's cool.
That's how we operate at the podcast.
For me, that just totally confirms what I said a few minutes earlier. Like, your cultural perspective is perfect for this show.
Next time, I'll just squash my campaign to recommend Assassin's Creed 4 and the Sea Shanties.
I'm sincere. I love this.
Don't change a thing.
Yes, don't change a thing.
Okay.
This is perfect, right?
Fine.
Yeah, my favorite story about White Heat is Cagney really didn't want to do it. He says, just another gangster film. He said, can we make the guy nuts? And they said, yeah. And that's
cool.
Yeah. Make him nuts.
He, like, breaks down. Like, there's a cafeteria scene where, like, he finds out that, minor spoiler, I guess, his mom gets killed and he goes bananas. It's like, you know, my mom, like, called me up after I told her I watched it. She's like, what do you think of the cafeteria scene? Isn't it amazing? And I was like, yeah, mom, you're right.
Explains a lot, your mom.
Tickling My Fancy is a movie. I hope it will still be here when this podcast is posted. It's called A Most Wanted Man. I'm sure we'll get it at the library. A Most Wanted Man. It's based on John le Carré's novel. It stars the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, Rachel McAdams, William Dafoe. I've always enjoyed the adaptation of le Carré's novels, and this is no exception. I shall give a brief synopsis. A Chechen Muslim immigrates illegally to Hamburg, Germany, and German intelligence takes a great deal of interest in him. Is he a threat to national security, or is he a man escaping torture and looking for freedom? Just when you think you have this movie figured out, well, you don't. Most Wanted Man, it's playing in several theaters. It's become an unexpected hit. Not as big as Guardians of the Galaxy, but I've been very impressed. It's been in the top 10 for the past 2 weeks of moneymakers. So, Most Wanted Man playing at several theaters right now in Nashville when this podcast posted. Hopefully, it'll still be playing. Amanda.
Now for something really different. We spent a lot of morning talking about a lot of violent stuff. I just want to talk about a cookbook. Well, it's kind of a cookbook. It's called Cooking for Geeks, Real Science, Great Hacks, and Good Food. It's by Jeff Potter. This is not a book the library owns, but you can get it through interlibrary loan, which is how I found it. Somebody else ordered it. I'm like, I want to read that too. So I got myself a copy because it works out nicely. So this book, I thought it was going to be like a cookbook of all recipes, and it's really not. It's more about how you can function in a kitchen. And so if you're a novice chef, this would definitely be, and if you're a novice chef, it's a geek. This is definitely a good book for you. It has several fun features. It's very dense, so it takes a while to kind of read through it. It's not a quick read, but it is really hilarious. The first thing I came across that I loved, there's a page about measurements, and it's hard to tell measurements if you're not used to using them all the time. So they give you this chart of what you can compare things to, and for length, they have like 15 centimeters is a big pen. 170 centimeters is Summer Glau, who she's from Firefly. 200 centimeters is Darth Vader. And then 16 meters, 4 centimeters, is a human tower of the Serenity crew. So this is kind of the stuff that's in this book. It's quite enjoyable. It has little inserts by different food geeks throughout the book. One is about Maureen Evans, who I had not heard of her before, but she does Twitter recipes. She's at Cookbook. And the whole recipe fits into 140 characters, which I'm pretty amazed at. You have to get the... I mean, I could read these to you, but you wouldn't... You have to see them to believe them. So that was enjoyable. The other thing I really liked about this book, there are recipes spaced throughout the book. My favorite is one called A Mean Chocolate Chip Cookie. And Meg Hourihan has a blog. She kind of helped found blogger.com. And so she started cooking, and she was tired of her old chocolate chip cookie recipe. So she's like, hey, guys, send me chocolate chip cookie recipes. And so she got like 40. And she's like, there's no way I can make all these and pick out the best ones. So what she did was she averaged them. And so she came up with this mean chocolate chip cookie recipe. And the numbers are insane. Like, it's preheat the oven to 354.17 degrees Fahrenheit. Then you have 2.04 cups of flour, 2.1896 tablespoons of unsalted butter, like 1.4 tablespoons of vanilla extract, 1.53 cups of semi-sweet chocolate chips. So it's just all these like really precise and, I mean, almost impossible. Like,
how do you measure that?
Yeah, 1.33 eggs. Ready, go.
Yeah, man.
So she made the recipe because, like a true geek, you got to, you know, if you're going to put it out there, you got to do it. She said the cookies turned out really good, so I don't necessarily recommend that recipe, but I did think it was enjoyable. And she does have weight measures that they might actually be easier to achieve than, say, like a tenth of a cup of dark brown sugar. But I don't cook by weight, I cook by cup size. So that was Cooking for Geeks, highly enjoyable. I'm not going to want to give this book back, but...
I've heard good things about that book, too. We need to triangulate and make sure the library buys that book, because I've heard that book's awesome.
Yeah, it's high quality, Adam.
And just, we're almost out of time, and just real quick, I'm going to do my top 25 European-style World War I board games with their copyright history, okay?
Ready, go.
Okay. Ready?
Oh, man.
I was just kidding. this idea came up. I heard this concept on the radio. A nerd is someone that wants to share what they love, whether you want to know about it or not. But a hipster is someone that wants to know about stuff, but then keep it all to themselves.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting concept. It's thought-provoking.
That's what hipsters are like, ironically liking. They don't like anything. They just ironically like things. Oh, I totally love this jacket.
Or they don't like anything. Yeah,
they don't actually like anything.
Like, I have a lot of friends that just hate everything. It's like,
you know,
I was that way through most of my 20s. Yeah. You know, if we were doing this podcast, you know, 10 years ago, I would have recommended 4 movies and then quit because there's nothing else.
I did take this opportunity to diss Kenneth Branagh's version of Shakespeare, which everybody else loves. Right? That's the show. Everybody go see Shakespeare in the Park. It's amazing. I said the first edition of Ian Rankin's Knots and Crosses had a cool cover. I was wrong. It was actually the 1987 Crime Club edition that had the cover that I liked. And that's the cover that's actually featured on the picture for the podcast that was posted on the Off the Shelf blog. But, you know, when you shrunk it down to thumbnail size, it wasn't as cool as, you know, real life full size. And I don't think there were any other mistakes, were there?
Not that I know of. You're perfect.
Not that I know of either.
Mary Poppins.
There were some omissions, but I'm just not going to mention those. And at the time of recording today, Snowpiercer is still held over at the Belcourt. At least for one showing a day, it will be gone by the time of the
first. Can't stop that train.
Oh.
For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org. I'm just excited about Shakespeare. I want to get to it.
That's right. To be or not to be.
I love that enthusiasm. And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Adam Dean.
Not Adam Warlock.
Or Bill Shakespeare.
Who's Adam Warlock?
More Marvel cosmic stuff. I watch it, Guardians of the Galaxy. It's fun.
And is he a character in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I wish he was. The whole time I'm like, I miss Adam Warlock.
Okay.
Me too.
Yeah, you should. He's great.
Comics.
Oh, yeah. Adam Warlock. I forgot. I love that character.
Yeah.
I wish he was in more comics. What a shame they would cut him out.
How unfortunate.
I bet Stan Lee is mad about that.
Enough said.
He's better in the earlier versions.
I like classic Stan Lee.
Italian, that Stan Lee.
Vintage.
The first Marvel comic movie, do you know what it was?
Oh, man.
Howard the Duck. Congratulations. They've come a long way, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Guardians of the Galaxy is wiping up at the box office. And they got, you know, Joss Whedon to do Avengers. Not a bad deal.
Well, George Lucas did Howard the Duck. It was producing it. It was the beginning of the end for a little word.
Oh, man.
No silence for George Lucas.
I really liked it when I was a kid, but then I grew up.
Me too, actually.
Leah Thompson was quite lovely.
I like Leah Thompson.
It ruined her career.
Are we developing a curse of Howard the Duck? Is that a thing?
Howard the Duck curse? Yeah, for sure. We don't, that's established, man.
That's old news.
That happened. That happened whenever that spell got cast, whenever that movie got released.
Oh, Reverend Tribunes! Oh, gentle aged men! Unbind my sons! Reverse the doom of death! And let me say that never wept before by tears and now prevailing orators!
Oh, noble father, you lament in vain. The tribunes hear you not, no man is by. And you recount your sorrows to a stone!
Lucius! For thy brothers, let me plead. Grave tribunes, once more I entreat of you.
My gracious lord, no tribune hears you speak.
Why, it is no matter, man. If they did hear, they would not mark me, or if they did mark, they would not pity me. Therefore I tell my sorrows to the stones. A stone is soft as wax, tribunes more hard than stones. A stone is silent and offendeth not. And tribunes with their tongues doom men to death.
But wherefore standst thou with thy weapon drawn?
To rescue my two brothers from their death. For which attempt, judges have pronounced my everlasting doom of banishment.
Oh, happy man! They have befriended thee. Why, foolish Lucius, dost thou not perceive that Rome is but a wilderness of tigers? Tigers must prey, and Rome affords no prey but me and mine. How happy art thou, then, from these devourers to be banished?